Okay, we're talking about the Hildebrand case and an article that you wrote.
Oh, yeah. So I wrote this piece, and I thought it was pretty good. But I figured I better get somebody else to sign it. So I asked Kraepel, would he? And he was kind of hesitant, but he said okay. So it appeared. And a couple of days later, I ran into Don Stevens, and he said, "Did you read that piece by Kraepel?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Boy, that's the best piece I've seen on that subject." He said, "We're going to have to do something about this."
So hearing another
so
voice,
then
they
told Hannah, you get the faculty to draw up a grievance procedure, and you give rights to people who are being denied reappointment to know the reasons and to have a hearing and so on. So they created a committee, Hannah created a committee with Killingsworth, who was a logical guy to head it up, head of the labor school and that. And Killingsworth went through various union contracts. And you can, if you read union contracts and you read the grievance procedure, you'll see how that grew out of union contracts. But I think it's better than the usual grievance process in a union contract. One serious flaw is the president is the final arbiter. Oh God, I've got to tell you a story about that. I came into the grievance office in 76, I think it was, and we had had an anti-discrimination procedure on the books for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years by that time. And they had a procedure for filing a claim of discrimination and an appeal and so on. And the final step was arbitration. Now, they had only had one arbitration in the 5 years or whatever it was of the existence of that procedure, in which Ferency represented somebody in the art department. It went to an arbitrator and lost. So there was absolutely no evidence that there was any danger to the university that a wild-eyed arbitrator would turn the store over to the complainant. You know, no evidence of that. But for some damn reason, somebody connected with the anti-discrimination procedure had decided to go to the Board of Trustees and recommend that arbitration be removed and let the president be the final arbiter. They didn't do me the courtesy of sending me a copy of this. I just got it somehow by accident. And I thought, God, here I've been just waiting for a chance to go to the trustees and recommend making an arbitration the final step in the grievance procedure, and that'd be symmetrical with the anti-discrimination, et cetera. So I figured I got to do something about this. So the first step was I vaguely read, I don't get the state journal, so I'm not always apprised of local events, but I vaguely knew that the state of Michigan had just rewritten the anti-discrimination, the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act, and they had broadened the categories of the people who were covered by that, you know, height and weight and marital status or lack thereof and so on. So I went to the meeting of the Board of Trustees prepared to argue, one, we should broaden the protection we give the faculty in the anti-discrimination procedure, and we ought to add arbitration. We should not remove it there, but keep it there and add it to our grievance procedure. Well, the chairman was a guy named John Brough. You ever come across him?
Seen his name on the list.
Well, he's supposed to be a liberal Democrat. He ran, when Ferency ran for government, for governor, I don't know, 20 years or so ago, Brough was running on the ticket as his lieutenant governor. So he was a card-carrying liberal Democrat. He's the chairman of the board. So when I said we should have arbitration, because they had it, he said, they don't have it. They don't have arbitration in the procedure. I said, wait a minute. I said, I've got it right here. I had the damn thing with me, of course. I said, it says, the final step, if it can't be resolved until that point, shall be the formation of a panel consisting of somebody representing the complainant, somebody representing the respondent, with an impartial chairman. I said, that's a standard tripartite arbitration procedure. You find it in collective bargaining agreements all over the place. No, you're wrong about that. Now, what the hell would you do? I mean, here's a guy, card-carrying liberal Democrat, and he tells some of that. So then a Republican, a guy named Dr. Jack Stack from Alma, Michigan, whom I hadn't gotten acquainted with, found out later is really a very nice guy. he said to me, Lash, he said, I like what you've suggested here in the way of adding categories to our anti-discrimination policy. What would you think of adding sexual preference? Well, I didn't know what the hell sexual preference meant. See, now you say sexual orientation, anyway, you can say preference. It conveys the idea you think somebody prefers to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't use it anyway. But I said, you mean protect homosexuals against discrimination? He says, yeah. I said, I think it's a terrific idea. Well, the secretary of the anti-discrimination office pipes up. I forget her name now. It's a woman. She was a lawyer. She said, I object to that. She said, homosexuality is a disease, and it can be cured. So Dr. Stack gave her about a 15-minute lecture on how that was the attitude of the medical profession, et cetera, for a long time. But they abandoned that 10 years earlier or something like that. So they added it. So it turned out we made a little progress, even though I didn't get anywhere with Bruff. But I could, God, I could have strangled that guy Bruff when he pulled that on. Jesus, that was just contemptible, isn't it? Well, you're an interviewer. You don't have to respond to that.
Why don't
so
we
anyway, that's how we got the grievance procedure.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved in any of the attempts, various attempts to unionize the faculty?
Oh, God, that's another one. No, the answer is no. I got involved to this extent. See, I could see, I think there were two or three attempts to organize the faculty leading to elections. And I could see right from the start that to try to organize the faculty under an MEA banner was doomed to failure, because the faculty looks down on the elementary and high school teachers who were in the MEA, and they would fear that the MEA would dominate the branch embracing the faculty here. So I could see that wasn't going to get anywhere. In addition to that, the people who were trying to organize on behalf of the MEA seemed to me mostly to be junior faculty, a lot of untenured people. And I went to somebody who was going to fill Korth or somebody, and I said, look, this is not like organizing a bunch of factory hands. You're organizing a bunch of professional people who take a lot of pride in what they do and that sort of thing. And they're snobs when it comes right down to it. And what you should do is what some unions have done. And the UAW would be a case in point. You take the highly skilled people and you let them be the leaders. So what you ought to do is get people who are the public spokespersons for the organizing drive, who have who are highly respected around the faculty. And there are liberal, you know, they may not be Nobel laureates, but they're highly respected. Let them be out front. See, then it's respectable to join the union. Paid no attention to me at all. Well, then in one of these efforts, the MEA was trying to organize. The AAUP locally here was very hostile to the idea of a union for faculty. And then there was some guy in engineering who had organized a vote no on the union issue group. And so one of the guys on the state news, who was a very witty guy, Louis Bender was his name, said to me, Lash, he said, I got an idea for a story. He said, here's what we'll do. I used to have a briefcase that had a free Hoffa sticker on it. Hoffa was in Federal Pen at this time. And he says, we'll get you, bring your briefcase and your sort of half-assed cowboy hat there, and we'll go out to a truck stop out on I-69. And when some guy comes in one of these big trucks, we'll ask if we can talk to him for a little while. And I'll get a state news photographer, and you have your foot on the bumper of this truck, or the fender, and you have the free Hoffa sticker showing for the camera and so on, and you pretend that you're talking to this guy about organizing, but you're organizing under the banner of the Teamsters. And you've been asked by Jimmy Hoffa, and you know, and the way we'll write it up, people will think it's a real story, see, it really happened. And you say, well, wait a minute, Hoffa, why would we be organized under his banner? He said, well, Hoffa knows about this. See, Hoffa's son was a student there at one time. He says he knows that if you're going to get anywhere with the MSU administration, you've got to have a union that bite a chunk out of management's arm. You'll get their attention that way. So he wrote this story. Front page of the state news. Oh, God, it was marvelous with this picture. And some people wrote into the state news, I think sociologists somewhere, saying, here I bust my buns to get out of the working class and into the middle class, and now little LaRue comes along and he wants to push me right back down. So anyway, I thought about it. It would have been, you'd expect me to have supported the union, but I could also see that these young people who were organizing the union were going to be screwed if we had a union, because the bulk of the members are going to be tenured and established people, and they're going to outvote the younger people. And when it comes to salaries and whatnot, they'll do what the University Committee on Faculty Affairs does and recommend pay increases which benefit the higher, the percent increases, not dollar increases, right? And they'll screw these poor bastards. So anyway, I was in my office one day, a couple of days before the last election, I think it was, and somebody from the state news called me and said, do you think the faculty need a union? And I said, you know, I've given a lot of thought to that, and I really don't think the faculty does. And the person said, why? I said, look, in any self-respecting department, the faculty determines who is going to be promoted, who's going to be hired. They make recommendations for salary increases, and they pretty much, it's kind of a syndicalist kind of an operation. Self-government. And now, I said, if you asked me that question before the grievance procedure, and I was FGO by this time, I would have said, yeah, we've got to have some way of redressing arbitrary treatment of faculty by administrators. But we have it now, and it works well. So, no, I don't, oh, God, I cut more damn flack when that came out. But that's my belief. Mm-hmm. See, you lose something when you organize a union in a university. I've talked to people who operate under union contracts, and the administration retaliates by cutting back on various perks that you just assumed you had a right to. You know, I can't remember all the reasons why. In any other atmosphere, I would have said, you're damn right, we need a union. But see, where you've got something that amounts de facto to self-government, I don't think you need it. Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting concept.
Well, see, take my own experience in econ, which I know best. I was never one of the higher paid people. I was pretty much down at the bottom. But I knew why I was down there. I wrote a book that got a lot of good reviews, published on page 3 of the New York Times book review, a very flattering review, and et cetera. But it took me 11 years to do it, and for most of that time, I wasn't publishing anything. So when the department was trying to figure out, do we give this guy a salary increase, and the emphasis on publication for 11 years, I'm not going to get a reward. And then when the damn thing came out, it was a bad year.
so few raises.
They would have given me a good raise, but they didn't have the money.
Mm-hmm. What was that book?
The title is Harry Bridges, The Rise and Decline of Radical Labor in the U.S. Mm-hmm. The name Harry Bridges mean anything to it?
No. Was he a longshoreman?
He was an Australian immigrant who came to this country as a sailor on an Australian sailing ship. Came ashore in, I think, 1920 or thereabouts, at a time when he was around 20. Decided to stay in San Francisco, so he got a job working on the waterfront, and they had a company union at that time, and he decided he'd try to organize a real union, and so in, I think, 1924 he tried that. It failed. He just bided his time, and when the New Deal came in, remember the NRA? Mm-hmm. There was a provision in the NRA to the effect that a company which qualified under the NRA would have to give its employees freedom to organize, bargain through representatives of their own choosing. So he took advantage of that, and the upshot was they organized a union independent of the employers in 1934. Shortly thereafter, the Immigration Service decided to deport him. He was accused of being red by these red squads in Portland and Los Angeles and whatnot, but not in San Francisco, oddly enough. So anyway, the government made four attempts to deport him on that same charge, and they would either, well, the first hearing was before an administrative law judge who ruled that the government had not shown that he was a communist, and so there was no reason to deport him. And then in 1950, right in the, you know, with the Korean War underway, they went after him again in federal court. And what the hell was the charge? I think that he lied when he said he wasn't a communist or some such thing. And the government won that case at the trial level, but the Supreme Court overturned it. And they made four attempts, and they lost all four to deport him. Meanwhile, he headed up a union which had a constitution which I thought was admirable. Now, the charge against him, especially from, well, it came from liberals as well as anti-union people, was that he had this democratic structure, but he really dominated the whole thing. And I don't know how you cope with that kind of an argument, but anyway, so I wrote a book about this guy. I was fascinated with this, what it would be like to be subjected to these damn trials. National news, and I've noticed the union had a clipping service, and I would, whenever there was a charge either by the House Un-American Activities Committee or another attempt to deport him, there'd be editorials all around the country, absolutely identical, in some little podunk cow town in Kentucky, in Pittsburgh.
The boilerplate was prepared.
Boilerplate, yeah, perfectly obvious. So I thought that'd make a great story. Here he organized these people, got terrific benefits from him, for them, and all the time he's fending off this attempt by the government to deport him. But one of the things I noticed was, inevitably, I mean, he was a Stalinist. I never could figure out if he was a member of the party, but he sure as hell was a Stalinist. And so there was naturally opposition to him within the union, but people wouldn't run against him because he was so damn popular, and sort of like running against George Washington, you know, the father of the union. And there were locals heavily Catholic, and they couldn't stand his pro-Soviet Union attitude. Mm-hmm. He came back from the Soviet Union, I think it was after war, yeah, sometime after World War II, and he said, Soviet unions are more democratic than American unions. Now that's just, on his face, just ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. But I asked one of the other guys in the leadership of the union one time, how the hell does the membership let him get by with those crazy statements he makes? I said, look, they know what they see. They've got better wages, they've got this equalization of work opportunity, they've got damn good health coverage, good pensions. That's what they know, and he got them for them. And they don't give a damn what he says. If he wants to come across with some crazy statement like the Soviet Union is a wonderful place, mm-hmm. so what? Mm-hmm. You can't prove that one way or another. They don't care. Well, that's true, and that was true about Hoffa. Mm-hmm. Same thing, they ignored his racketeering.
They kept the workers, or improved their benefits and status.
Don't you think the faculty mm-hmm. at Michigan State would take the same position? Mm-hmm. I do, mm-hmm. I think they would. Mm-hmm. I think I would have.
I'm going to pause here for a few minutes. Yeah.